It's Friday, the 11th of December, 2015. Happy birthday to Roy Hibbert. And welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by moneyball.com.au and Jade is Awesome. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast just like Jade is Awesome, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes. It is very, very simple. We're very, very close to getting 300 reviews for the podcast. I'd like to get that. It's a big milestone. I'd love to get 300 reviews for the show. So if everybody's listening and you got 2 minutes spare across the weekend, just jump onto iTunes, leave a review, make it two words, make it a sentence, make it a paragraph, make it funny, make it whatever. Just if you could do it, it really helps with the podcast attracting sponsors and keeping everything running over here. Okay, thank you to moneyball.com.au as well, which is Australasia's only daily fantasy sports site. You can get involved with Moneyball if you live in Australia or New Zealand and play some daily fantasy sports, NFL, NBA, A-League, Premier League. I think there's Premier League. I know there's A-League, definitely. We can get involved and play some of those sports on Moneyball and win some money. And it's I don't think anyone would ever say no to winning any money. All right, let's talk about games. We've got a big show today. We're going to talk about the games from Thursday. We're going to preview the games for Friday. And we're also going to take a look back, our weekly look back at the last 2 weeks in fantasy basketball, going through the top 20 players, some rookies and sophomores, some buy low, sell high sort of guys, and some waiver wire players who are really sort of excelling. So that's what we're going to be doing in today's episode. That's enough of me talking about nothing.
Let's get to it.
The monstrous line of the night.
G'day, Australia. I'm Big Kev.
You are Big Kev, and Oklahoma City's Big Kev, Kevin Durant, is the monstrous line of the night. He put up a triple-double, 25, 12 and 10, two threes and a steal on his usual stellar percentages, 8 of 14 from the field, all 7 of his free throws, 5 turnovers, but you know my thoughts on turnovers. Kevin Durant was fantastic. We'll talk about him a little bit later on in the show, but he has returned pretty much to his top-of-the-heap ways. The hamstring injury was a bit concerning to me, given that there's compensatory issues with leg injuries in that foot. So let's hope that he is fully healthy for the rest of the season. But while he's out on the court, he's putting up great numbers. Him and Westbrook are coexisting very nicely, putting up just his usual superb numbers. He's on an insane shooting streak at the moment. He's shooting 63% across his last three games. That's obviously something that will fall, but in the last three games, he's going 63, 54, 90. And there's some pretty good numbers that can really only be matched by Steph Curry in the NBA at the moment. The waiver wire line of the night comes from the same game, and it's Kent Bazemore. He played 28 minutes off the bench. He still played less than Thabo Sefolosha, but he's playing basically all of the backup wing minutes. And that's fine. I wish teams would do that more often. 28 minutes for Bazemore, 22 points, 4 triples, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal. He was 7 of 12 shooting, and he hit all 4 of his free throws. He's having quite a remarkable season, and I know that I've been very, very down on Kent Bazemore this season because I just don't believe that he's a good player. But he's showing efficiency improvements like I'd have to go and research this. I don't reckon many people would have done this. In his fourth season, he has improved his field goal percentage by 6%. So he was a 37% shooter in his rookie year, 43 the next year, 43 the next year, and he's at 48 at the moment. He's actually shooting better off the bench than what he was in the starting lineup. He's 53% over his last three games. But more impressively, his free throw percentage in his first season was 61. His second season was 61. His third season was 60. So you'd say, I've got a pretty good track record of Kent Bazemore. He's a 60% free throw shooter. Don't worry about that. He's shooting 87% this year. It's a 27% increase. What's real? 3 seasons worth of data or 19 games worth of data? I don't even know what to believe anymore with Kent Bazemore. If that efficiency comes down, then obviously his production comes down. His scoring comes down. And he's shooting an additional six points per 36 minutes per game based on last season. And that's all to do with his efficiency. His increased free throw rate, his increased not his increased free throw rate, sorry, his increased free throw percentage, his increased shooting percentage from the field. That's a big difference. Everything else is pretty similar. He's hitting more threes, and again, that's because he's shooting 45% on threes. 45. These are massive increases. Everything else is basically what he's shown us throughout his career. I still don't maintain that he's going to be able to be this good for the season. He's not going to be a 45% three-point shooter. I don't think he's going to be an 87 and 48% free throw and field goal guy. But you have to own him at this point. The minutes are concerning, the fact that he's playing less than Thaba, because if all these percentages drop, which track record thinks that they will have to regress, then his value drops down significantly. But for now, you own him. But I'm not dropping someone really good to go and get him. And I don't think you necessarily have to drop someone really good to go and get him. He'll be around in certain spots, but the role of Thabo Sefolosha is limiting what Bazemore can do if these percentages do regress to career numbers. And there is a risk of that, and that's something that I am worried about with Kent Bazemore. The young gun of the night, Jahlil Okafor, was back in the starting lineup for the Philadelphia 76ers, and he was great. 31 minutes for Okafor, 22 and 10, 2 assists, 2 blocks. He went 7 of 15 from the field, and he hit all 8 of his free throws. What? Okafor is not a good free throw shooter. He's better than I anticipated that he was going to be, definitely. He's sitting at 70% for the season, and that was helped by that actually jumped his free throw percentage from today up by 3%, the fact that he hit all 8 of his free throws. He's doing it on 4 attempts a game. Maybe he is a better, look, he was terrible at Duke. He was a terrible free throw shooter. It was about 55%, I think, he shot there. Summer League, he was not good either, but he's doing all right in the pros, and maybe he has actually worked on that, which is possible. He's averaging 17 and 8 for the season, 1.5 blocks, which I think will come down, 1.3 assists, 0.3 steals. He doesn't help there, and his field goal percentage has been putrid. The last month, he's shooting just 43%, and one of the big draw cards of him was going to be a high field goal percentage. So you're obviously hurting there, but rookies will improve. He will get his field goal percentage. Probably, you know, we talk post-All-Star breaks a lot on this show. And when we look back on this season, we'll probably see a post-All-Star break Jahlil Okafor at a 48-49% from the field. Just that won't make his season number get up to that because he started off so poorly in that area. It takes a lot of guys time to get used to, and rookies. It takes them time to get used to being able to shoot high percentage. That's why you see big jumps from guys going from first to second season and even second to third in those percentage categories. So we can imagine Okafor's numbers definitely going up in that sort of situation, but he does have limitations, and the limitations are he's a points and rebounds guy. The field goal percentage is a limitation. I don't think he's going to be a 1.5 blocks guy. He's a high turnover player, no steals, no assists, no threes. So you have to sort of make sure that, and he'll fit plenty of teams. I've got him on quite a few teams this season in certain builds. I drafted him on punt free throw builds, and he's definitely surprised me there. 70% isn't good, but it's not 55 or 60%. Which we were projecting him for at the start of the season. So back in the starting lineup, after that suspension, after all the bad stuff that was coming out, it's good for him to get a good game back on the board and look more accomplished than what he has over the previous 2 to 3 weeks. The dud of the night, Enes Kanter. 11 minutes for Kanter. He had 4 points, 5 rebounds on 2 of 6 shooting. Now, Kanter is still owned in 75% of leagues. I dropped him in a 12-team league. I think that he's definitely droppable in 10-team leagues, and I reckon you can drop him in 12-team leagues. Billy Donovan just does not want to play him, and I can understand that. They're going small a lot with playing. Look, in this game, their top 5-minute getters were Durant, Westbrook, Adams, Waiters, and Ibaka. So they run with Ibaka a bit at the 3. Sorry, at the, three, at the 5 and play that small lineup as well. Kanter would need injuries to Adams to get 30 minutes a night, and even then his defensive liabilities maybe not something that Billy Donovan's all that interested in seeing out there. If he gets 30 minutes a night, he's a must-own player. If he's getting less than 20, there's no point. And he can double-double in 20 minutes, no doubt. But he lacks the other numbers where a 10 and 10 double-double from Kanter is okay, but you prefer him to be a 20 and 12 guy because that makes up for his lack of steals and blocks and assists and threes. The fact that he could go 20 and 10. If he's giving you 12 and 10, it's not as exciting. So I reckon Enes Kanter can be dropped in pretty much most places unless you've just got a really deep bench and you want to stash in case something happens to a guy like Steven Adams or even Serge Ibaka that would enable Kanter to get bigger minutes. But for now, his role does not appear to be one where he's going to be challenging for a larger share of the pie anytime soon. The DFS value play of the day was Andrea Bargnani of the Brooklyn Nets. He was a minimum salary player, 3,500. He put up 31.7 FanDuel points in 23 minutes. He was 23-6 with an assist on really good percentages as well. If for some reason, for whatever reason, if you had him in a standard league, I don't know why you would have. The reason he got more minutes coming back from that hamstring injury is that Brook Lopez was limited to 19 minutes due to foul trouble. Now, Bargnani will have these games. He'll have games where he can score, and he is a pretty deep. We saw last year in his run with the Knicks, he could score a lot. He was hitting threes. He was grabbing decent-ish rebounds, and he can block shots. But I don't think that his role is going to be big enough where we have to really pay much attention. Now, if Brook Lopez happened to go down, Bargnani's probably going to have to be the guy who'd log 30 minutes in Brooklyn. And then we'd want to go, okay, our team can deal with getting a guy who's going 20-7 with a 3 and a block and a half, because he can do that sort of thing on, you know, pretty good free, with a pretty good free throw percentage as well. But for now, we just see, okay, he's back from the hamstring. Yes, he can still score. Yes, he can still be bad at actual basketball, but be productive in fantasy basketball. And we just mark this up to, like, who knew that that was going to happen? The answer is pretty much no one. All right, before we get into these, what do we call them? Before we get into these box scores, just a minute to talk about today's sponsor, and that is No Halftime. You would have heard me talk about No Halftime already. If you haven't, No Halftime is it's an app. It's a daily fantasy game app where you can win real money on your iOS device. Say you're staring at your weekly fantasy opponent and you're thinking to yourself, I would love to challenge one of his players, but not the entire team. You normally can't do that, but with No Halftime, you can. You can go, I'm just going to challenge one guy. I'm going to get one player. You could have done in today's one, I'm going to challenge Shane Larkin versus Isaiah Cannon. It doesn't have to be from the same game. They said, who's going to have the most fantasy points? I'm going to put that out there and we'll see if anyone else accepts the challenge. You put it from, $5, $10, $15 on it, and winner take all, most fantasy points in the matchup. It's easy to accept people's challenges. It's easy to create challenges. It's very, very straightforward. It does not take long at all. Hey, that matchup comes up, tick for yes, cross for no, and you're done. You can do it for NFL, baseball, hockey, college football, college basketball, and a number of other sports. Join today by downloading the app from nohalftime.com or your app store, which is only for Apple devices. But make sure you use the promo code DUNK, D-U-N-K, and you get $25. Pretty good deal. You don't have to spend anything. You can just get $25, put some matchups out there, win them, and then come back and double your money. Get yourself some pretty decent returns on there. There is definitely, every time I've been on there to play, there's matchups that I can find where I like them, and I think I've bat doubled my money using that app as well. So get out there, download No Halftime, use the promo code DUNK, and good luck. No Halftime, where the fantasy sports season never takes a break. All right, now let's look at these box scores. Thanks to No Halftime for their support of the show. Let's bring up these box scores and take a look at what went down in the NBA today. Do-do-do. There we go. Isn't that lovely? The first game of the night, there was only four games. The Philadelphia 76ers and the Brooklyn Nets. Everybody's boyfriend, Tony Roten, returned to the starting lineup. He played just 17 minutes, and it was relatively efficient for Tony Roten. He was 3 of 5 from the field. He was also 3 of 6 from the free throw line. He went 9-4-2 with a steal with 2 turnovers. Now, because Tony Roten started, a lot of people are going to get excited. I've been pretty vocal on my stance on Tony Roten. He's not good. He won't be able to get 30 minutes a night. Kendall Marshall is returning today, Friday? Friday's games. Kendall Marshall's returning in Friday's games. Tony Roten isn't playing. So they're going to have Marshall and Roten returning from ACL surgery. They're going to get minutes in the teens and then ramping up to the 20s. They're going to have Isaiah Cannon and they're going to have TJ McConnell. I don't think that really any of those guys are going to be worth owning in standard leagues when four guys are competing basically for one position. Now, Roten and Cannon can play a bit of shooting guard, but they're not ideal at it, but they can play a little bit there too. But I'm not stashing Tony Roten. I'm not stashing Kendall Marshall. If I earn TJ McConnell and there's someone else out there, I'm okay dropping TJ McConnell. It's just, it's a very, very messy situation. TJ McConnell was actually really good in this game. 17 points off the bench, 3 threes and 3 steals. He also took another 2 free throws as well, but his value is about to drop. He only had 1 assist in this game, and that's where all of his value was coming from, basically. He's going to drop off. Nerlens Noel, this is a nightmare for fantasy owners, really, this game. Minutes were restricted all over the place. Nerlens Noel played just 21, 6 and 5, but he had those 4 steals and has definitely been disappointing people this year, but he is still almost a top 100 player for most of the season. So he's still doing enough, but it's nowhere near what we anticipated him to do when, you know, the last 2 months of last season, he was a 2 block and 2 steal a game guy on average. I don't know what's changed. Yes, Jahlil Okafor is there, but he was playing quite a bit of 4 last year so that they could get him used to playing the 4. They were playing him next to, you know, such pieces of crap as Henry Sims, but they were playing other big guys next to him at times so he could play the 4 because they were expecting to have Joel Embiid play the 5. Now, Embiid's not here, but Okafor's playing it, and I don't know why it's really impacting Nerlens Noel's defense as much as it is. Let's hope that starts to return, and I think that it will, maybe not to the 1.8 or 2 level, but 1.5 to 1.6 is a decent area to aim for Nerlens Noel, I think. Bob Cove struggled, 27 minutes for him, 6 points, 2 rebounds, and 2 steals and a block on some poor shooting. Isaiah Cannon, 4-3-3. Jakar Sampson, my boy, did not play at all, and that's probably the way it should remain. And Jeremy Grant was quite good, actually. 9-8 for him with 2 blocks and a steal. And Rishawn Holmes, he's a guy that deep league guys need to look out for. He only played 17 minutes, but he does project as a really useful fantasy player. 14-1-1 with a steal for Rishawn. Onto the Nets, after a dud game in the last one, Shane Larkin went back to showing us why he is a 12-team league ad. 14-4-6 with a steal in 27 minutes, while Jarrett Jack also played 27 and went 5-6-8. Larkin's been really good of late. I'll talk about him a little bit later on as well, and I'm more than happy with stashing him in a 12-team league. Not even stashing, because you're getting top 100 value out of him anyway. Thad Young was good. It was great. 8-11 with 2 steals. And Bojan Bogdanović started in place of Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. 33 minutes for Bogdanović, 10-3-3 with 2 3-pointers. That's not great production for a 33-minute night, but he is okay. He's sort of worth looking at. But the best he's going to be is probably the second worst player on your roster. I don't think he's going to jump up and become a top 70 sort of player, so I don't think we should have those sort of hopes for him. Joe Johnson really struggled, 7 points and 2 assists with a 3-pointer in this game. The next game was the Los Angeles Clippers and the Bulls. You'll see Blake Griffin play just 25 minutes. He was ejected for punching Taj Gibson in the face. The Clippers announcers were shocked that Griffin got ejected for this one. It's clearly not deliberate. He was going for a block. If he was going to swipe the ball away, I'd be dumbfounded. He took a swing and smacked Taj Gibson right across the face. Maybe that's bull bias coming out, but he smashed him across the face. Griffin was looking good as well, 18-11 with a couple of blocks, while DeAndre Jordan went 10-14 with 2 steals and a block, and actually went 2-3 from the free throw line. A bit of a different thing for him there. Chris Paul could not get anything to go. 5-16 for Paul, 12 points, 5 assists, a steal, and 2 3-pointers. While we saw Luke Marmute start at small forward, and again, just give the minutes to Wes Johnson. He had 3 threes in 15 minutes with 4 rebounds. Josh Smith had 8-7 in his 19 minutes. Lance Stevenson went 5-3-4 in 18. And Paul Pierce is as done as I've seen a player aside from Kobe. He played 5 minutes for no stats, can't do anything at the moment. He is struggling to get any sort of playing time at all. JJ Redick could not replicate his red-hot night. He went 2-11 for 8 points, 2 rebounds, and 4 assists. He's obviously still worth holding in standard leagues. Pau Gasol on fire was 24-6, 3 3-pointers, 2 steals, 2 blocks, when Jimmy Butler went 14-5-8 with 2 steals and 2 blocks. Nikola Mirotic, just it frustrates me. Yes, the Bulls won, but they scored 83 points. 83. Now, yesterday, I said something about Taj Gibson being shit, and someone called me out for it on YouTube, and that's probably fair enough. You can see he's not shit, but what I was meant to get across is that he's limited offensively. He's old. He's 30 years old, Taj Gibson. We've seen his ceiling. He's on the way down. What does he offer this team? What does he offer them as a starter? Some defense? Yeah. But the team is not flowing offensively. Not like they do when Mirotić is on the court. I feel he's being really underutilized. I'm not dropping him. He still had 11 rebounds in his 14 minutes, 5 points and a 3. Yes, his shooting is really bad, but I feel like he's not being utilized well at all. Like, at all. When Mirotić is on the court, looked up a couple of stats for this one, the Bulls are averaging 1.035 points per possession. When he's off the court, they're down at 0.979. That's a relatively significant drop-off of points per possession. Nikola Mirotic's offensive rating, he is plus 7.3 offensive. Plus 7.3 offensive rating. The defense is, the opposition is, let's work this out, they're 1.9 points better off per 100 possessions with him on the bench. Overall, the overall net rating for the Bulls with Mirotić on the on-off numbers is plus 5.3. It's pretty decent. Overall, what I'm trying to look at, or trying to say here, is that the Bulls' offense needs Mirotić to play. I don't like what Fred Hoiberg's doing with this rotation in the front court. I don't think that Gibson is a... We know what Gibson is. And he doesn't help spread this floor. Jimmy Butler's not a good three-point shooter. Pau Gasol, yes, he hit three threes, but it's not his role. Derrick Rose can't shoot anything. Tony Snell, please. They need Mirotić out there to actually be an offensive focal point. And I don't really care if he starts, but he shouldn't play 14 minutes. He shouldn't play less minutes than Kirk Heinrich. He shouldn't play less minutes than Aaron Brooks, Tony Snell, Doug McDermott, Taj Gibson, Joakim Noah. He shouldn't play less minutes than any of those guys. His importance to the offense is huge. The offense does struggle when he's not in there. All you have to do is look back to the first 2 weeks of the season and see how good he was, and the Bulls' offense was flowing and they were scoring well. I don't really know what's going on. I am definitely holding on to him for now, though. But the last couple of games have been definitely baffling to me with the way that Mirotić has been used. I do not understand the Taj Gibson situation. One of these guys should be traded, Gibson or Noah, and hopefully that allows Mirotić to flourish. Joakim Noah had 2 points in his 20 minutes. He had 13 rebounds, a steal, and 2 blocks. So overall, some okay value, but not obviously not the best night for him, and he's hard to own in standard leagues. Well, Derrick Rose is just not getting it done. 11-3-2 with a 3 and a steal. Just back on Mirotić for a sec. I know that many of you don't like Mirotić, and you think that he's a dud, and you want to drop him, and you'll probably have issue with some of those things that I threw out there, but I just believe that from the Bulls' point of view, he is a guy that needs to play, and he needs to get minutes to help this offense actually reach potential, because at the moment, it doesn't look good, and these other guys, it's just too stodgy. They need him out there to try and create something, and yes, his defense isn't great, but it's not a massive difference. Like, the net ratings aren't, it's not huge. Based on the difference that he provides offensively compared to what he detracts from defensively, it's a win to have him out on the court. Thank you. Let me know your thoughts on Mirotić if you do have any. The next game is the Atlanta Hawks and the Oklahoma City Thunder. Jeff Teague, 18-5-4 with a couple of steals. Kyle Korver hit 4 threes for 12 points with 4 assists. And Thabo Sefolosha, another really good fantasy line. 11-3-1 with 4 steals. He normally chimes in with blocks and hits threes as well, but he didn't do that in this game. It's really hard to go out and look in a 12-team league and go, I'm adding Thabo Sefolosha, but the numbers tell you you should, and he can definitely fill in some categorical holes that your team might have. Paul Millsap had probably his worst game for the season, closely followed by Al Horford. 7-8-4 for Millsap with two blocks, and Horford went 9-7-3 on 3 of 14 shooting for Horford, and Millsap took 5 shots from the field. 5. 2 of 5 from the field. He was 3 of 8 from the free throw line. So both of those guys absolutely stunk. Dennis Schroeder went 7-4 with 2 assists, a steal, and a block in his 19 minutes. Onto the Thunder. Russell Westbrook, 23-6-10 with 3 threes and 3 steals, while Serge Ibaka went 23-10 with a steal and 2 blocks. So Durant, Ibaka, and Westbrook all scored over or at least 23 points. Hit 6 threes between them, had 28 rebounds between them, 20 assists, 5 steals, and 2 blocks. So obviously, as usual, they carried this team. Steven Adams was 11-7 in his 31 minutes. He is probably a deep 14-team league guy. That's probably about it. He has nights where you go, yeah, that's great for a 12-team league, but then you'll play 20 minutes in the next game and won't be as effective. And Dion Wade has got 31 minutes, but shot 4 of 14 for 9 points with a 3, a rebound, and assist. And he's probably, at this stage, he's not a 12-team league must-own. He will be okay in certain sorts of situations, I think is the best way of putting Dion Wade as his value. The last game of the night was the New York Knicks and the Sacramento Kings. Kristaps Porzingis, well, he didn't play 13 minutes, thankfully. 13-7 in 34 minutes, a 3, 2 assists, 2 steals, 3 blocks. His shot wasn't falling, but he's got an ability that if his shot doesn't fall, he'll just do it in other areas. And that's 7 rebounds, 2 steals, and 3 blocks. Still hit 4 of his 5 free throws. So he's back in business. Speaking of back in business, Lance Thomas just continues to get minutes. 10-6-2, 2 threes, and 3 steals. Now, Lance Thomas is really not very good, but he's getting a pretty consistent role with the Knicks at the moment. And he's somewhere, 12-team leagues don't need to look at him, but he's averaging 24 minutes a game, 10.5 points, a 3, 2.5 rebounds, half a steal on 45 and 83 shooting in the last 2 weeks. 16-team leaguers, Lance Thomas probably isn't owned, and he's been pretty consistent. I think you need to own him in a 16-team format. Carmelo went 23-14 with a 1-1 on some just horrible shooting, including 6 of 11 from the free throw line. That's not very Carmelo-like. And Aaron Aflalo played 33 minutes, had 14-4 with a steal and a block, and that's massive for him to get a steal and a block, but missed all 6 of his free throw attempts. I think Matt Smith put out a Smith stat today that he was 2 of his last 18 three-point attempts. The Knicks gave him the ball on the last couple of attempts to win the game. He missed them both because he's just not good. And he's still a back-end 12-team league guy at best. Jose Calderon got a lot of minutes here, 32 minutes, 8, 2, and 3 with a couple of threes, and Jerian Grant was reduced to 3. And it's good to see Sasha Vujicic play 18 minutes. Nat. Why is he getting minutes? That's like 44 minutes in the last 2 games for Vujicic. Robin Lopez down under 20 again, 1958, 6-7. There's no point owning Robin Lopez in 12-team leagues at this point. The minutes are just so... Yeah, he'll play 30, and then he'll go 19, 19, 19, 19, 30, 19. Like, it just doesn't happen often enough for him. He's not producing. He's not doing anything. Maybe he's finished, and it's a pretty small prime that he had. One season of being good. Oddly enough, Kevin Serafin, who'd been getting pretty decent minutes lately, did not play at all, and Derek Fisher's quickly getting into that category of coaches where I just do not know what they're doing. Rajon Rondo, 40 minutes, and the Kings were running an extremely tight rotation here, just 8 players. Rondo played 40 minutes, 16, 9, and 12. DeMarcus Cousins went 27 and 11 and 2. Darren Collison had 16, 1, and 3 in 25 minutes. Rudy Gay went 10, 8, and 2 with 3 blocks in 40 minutes. Ben McLemore went 7 and 2 in 24 minutes. And Omri Caspi played 40 minutes for 11, 8, and 3. So Caspi should be owned and Collison should be owned in most 12-team formats. Obviously, Rondo, Cousins, and Gay should be as well. And Costa Kufos' minutes have dropped right down. After a couple of big games when Cauley Stein went out, Omri Caspi is taking that role now. So Kufos is probably a 14-team league guy, maybe 12, under very, very specific circumstances. But not for everybody. That's probably the best way of putting that. All right, that is it for the recap of Thursday's action. Time for a quick... Oh, you know what? Let's not have a quick break. Let's go and talk about the rest of the season-long stuff before we have a break and talk daily fantasy. So when I say let's talk about the rest of the season-long stuff, what am I talking about? Well, what we're doing is looking back over the last 2 weeks. And I think 2 weeks is a good time to get an idea of hot players, cold players, who's putting up good numbers. So let's look at it here now. I do my head-to-head rankings for the last 2 weeks. It's head-to-head basis. So I exclude people's bad categories because in head-to-head, I think that you should be punting categories. And I don't think that, I think you want guys who are elite and dominating certain categories or putting up bigger numbers to be more heavily rewarded. The top 20 guys for the last 2 weeks... Steph Curry, clearly number one. He's that. The difference between Steph Curry and the number two player is the difference between the number two player and the number 16 player. That's how far ahead he is over these last 2 weeks. So Curry's at one, clearly. Still averaging. He's averaging 5.9 threes, 32 points, 4.7 rebounds, 6 assists, 1.6 steals on 57% shooting. It's incredible. KD is the second player. Paul George comes in third, and Kyle Lowry comes in fourth. I think Paul George and Kyle Lowry at 3 and 4 are a lot of people would be surprised about. Well, they would have been surprised about if you told them that at the start of the season. James Harden's at 5. John Wall has been red hot lately. He comes in at 6, 24 points, 1.3 threes, 8.8 assists, 2.6 steals on 48%. So everyone was bashing John Wall, including Vivek on Twitter, who was basically just trying to eat John Wall's kids for breakfast every day. That's how much hate he was spewing his way. But Wall has definitely turned it around. He's on fire at the moment. And if you picked him at pick 9 or pick 8, you'd be pretty happy with what's happening recently. Anthony Davis comes in at 7. Russ Westbrook at number 8. LeBron James at number 9. And Klay Thompson. Yes, Klay Thompson comes in at number 10. He was that bad to start the season, but he's been red hot. His last 7 games have yielded 22.5 points, 4.7 threes, 3.4 rebounds, 2 assists, 0.4 steals, but 1.1 blocks on 52% and 92%. He's been really good. Andre Drummond at 11, Gordon Hayward at 12, Bob Cubb at 13. He's dropped off in the last week, though. Damian Lillard at 14, Marc Gasol at 15, Isaiah Thomas at 16. He's been a regular fixture in the top 20 this season. And yes, Marcus Smart not being there probably aids him in that, but he's just been really good. Pau Gasol at 17, Kawhi Leonard at 18, CJ McCollum is inside the top 20 for the last 2 weeks at 19, and Brook Lopez rounds it out at number 20. Let's talk rookies, and let's talk the top 5 rookies. Karl-Anthony Towns is at 22, Kristaps Porzingis at 29, so they're clearly well and truly above everybody else. It's good to see Towns getting those minutes back. It's good to see Kristaps getting them back today after that odd performance on Wednesday. Which one would you prefer? Would you prefer Towns or would you prefer...
Porzingis.
Who would you have... fantasy only. Who would you rather have on your team this year, Towns or Porzingis? TJ McConnell is at 100. D'Angelo Russell at 124. Despite the tomfoolery that Byron Scott is going through, and I mentioned that yesterday, we'll move him to the bench. We'll play him 33 minutes. And Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is now out for a pretty long time with that foot fracture. He was 138th over the last 2 weeks. The rookies are outplaying the sophomores, especially at the top end. The top 5 sophomore second-year players, Lord Alfred Payton at 52. He's really solidified himself lately. That could change in 5 minutes' time, but he's been playing fantastically. Jeremy Grant at 75. I'd look at owning him in all 12-team leagues. Jordan Clarkson at 78. Julius Randle, the same boat as D'Angelo Russell. He's at 91, and Nerlens Noel at 101. A couple of guys that I looked at the rankings and went, oh, this seems a bit odd for them. Dwayne Wade is ranked 25th over the last 2 weeks. Now, not saying Dwayne Wade's not good. He's probably not this good, but you know that the injury risk is there with him. So I'd be okay with moving Dwayne Wade if you can get back enough value. Jay Crowder at 35. There's no way I believe Jay Crowder is that good of a player. And Lou Williams at 61. His minutes are way up. I don't think anyone's going to buy into Lou Williams being that good. But a couple more games of 31 minutes, and you might have a situation where you can sell him. Maybe people like the fact that he's got 2 girlfriends who know about each other. Buy low players. Nikola Mirotic at 169. Now, to trade for him, I don't reckon you'd have to give up much, but he's going to be on waiver wise. I'd be looking at adding him, definitely. Monte Ellis is ranked 145th over the last 2 weeks. Throw your second worst player at him. Trevor Ariza at 118. He's injured. This is a great opportunity to grab Ariza if he fits your team. Mallow at 93. Al Horford at 70. And Boogie Cousins at 56. These are all top 30 players, with Boogie a top 10 player. Even Chris Paul, who's ranked at 39. These are all guys who are going through slumps. This is when you target these players. You know, Boogie, Chris Paul, Horford, Mallow, they're guys that you target and see if you can get good value on getting them, because they are going through a rough patch here, but you'd have to expect that they all bounce back. The top 100... No, let's try again. Looking through the top 100 players, I went through some guys and looked at who had less than 50% ownership. Pat Beverley is ranked 43rd over the last 2 weeks. Must-own player. Jan Mahinmi is at 64 over the last 2 weeks. Probably wouldn't say must-own, because it really depends on the way your team's built, because he can be a poor free-throw shooter, but the rebounds are there, the scoring is okay, steals, blocks, good field goal percentage. I like Mahinmi. Mirza Teletovic at 65. He can be a little bit up and down, but you get nice rebounds, great three-pointers for a big man. Jeremy Grant at 75, I've touched on already. And Trevor Booker comes in at 77. I think a lot of people will be surprised at that, given how much he stunk in the first game. But he's been really solid off the bench, getting some double-doubles. I like him as a back-end 12-team league guy. Alex Len, I had a big chat about him on yesterday's program. He's ranked 80th the last 2 weeks. There is a small chance to me that he keeps the starting job and more minutes over Tyson Chandler. He has been more effective than Tyson Chandler this season. in my opinion, I was getting into somewhat of a discussion with someone on the Basketball Monster forums today, talking about who was the more valuable player. And according to the ESPN's Real Plus Minus, Tyson Chandler comes in ahead of Alex Len, but Alex Len has a higher PER, higher win shares per 48, box score plus minus, offensive box score plus minus, and defensive plus box score plus minus. And even from his raw stats and the eye test, Len has been playing better than Chandler to me. Now, whether they get their new acquisition Chandler and go, oh, are we going to bench him? I don't know. But Len's been, when he gets 27 minutes to 30 minutes, he's putting up good numbers. I'm okay with grabbing him just in case that happens, because if it happens, he's going to be valuable. Same with Shane Larkin at 82. Yes, he's in a bench role, but he's putting up steady top 20 value over the last probably 3 to 4 weeks. Top 20. Steady top 100 value over the last 3 to 4 weeks. He's slowly eating into Jarrett Jack's role on most nights. I like him. Kelly Olynyk at 83. You know my thoughts on Kelly Olynyk. Even in these Brad Stevens-induced minutes, he's ranked 83rd. He's got fantasy upside written all over him. To me, if you're stashing anyone, if you're in a roto league, I'm grabbing Olynyk 100%. Even in a head-to-head league, I'm okay just to take a risk on it. It's unlikely that he gets 25 minutes. It feels unlikely, but if it does, look out. Kent Bazemore at 86 and Thabo Sefolosha at 95. We talked on both those guys before. And two guys that just sneak into the top 100 who are two of the most maligned players in the NBA, Ray Felton at 98 and Rodney Stuckey at 99. Now, these guys are not all that good, but they can be fantasy relevant, and at the moment, they're getting pretty decent minutes. Felton's an interesting one to me. He played 30 minutes in the last game with JJ Barea back, with Devin Harris back, and with Chandler Parsons in the lineup. Now, Parsons' minutes will go up a little bit, and that will impact Felton, but for now, if you've got some garbage on your roster, maybe add Felton and see where it goes, because maybe he gets a 27 to 30 minute role per night, and it can be useful. I think he was 11, 6, and 5 in the last game. He's rebounding the ball pretty well, handing out some assists. It's probably the least cool player to go and add to your team, but Ray Felton has been producing top 100 numbers the last couple of weeks, and even with everyone back, he played 100 minutes. No, that's not true. He played 30 minutes. I don't know why I said 100 there. Now, it's time for a quick break, and then we'll be back to talk some daily fantasy action for Friday. There is 11 games on Friday, so we've got a lot of daily fantasy stuff to try and break down as best as we can. There's quite a bit of interesting info as well to have a look at in this matchup. The first game we're going to take a look at is the Miami Heat and the Indiana Pacers. Yeah, that's who it is. The Indiana Pacers. No spread in this game yet because there's a couple of injury issues we need to pay attention to. Most notably, Hassan Whiteside is questionable with an ankle issue. He hurt at some stage during their last game, but doesn't really know when. Just said it woke up sore with it. If he misses out, then the Heat are not in a good spot with their center. Chris Bosh will have to play center. Josh McRoberts will get a big boost in his minutes. He'll likely have to start and play 25, or not even start, play starters minutes, because Amari Stoudemire is not going to be able to play a big load of minutes. Chris Anderson's unlikely to be able to play a big load of minutes. So the Whiteside's one we have to have a look at. Luol Deng came off the bench in his first game back, and Gerald Green started. That might be the case again. I don't really know. Now, Gerald Green is still priced only at 3,700. He is averaging 17 points in 29 minutes over the last three. He put up 17 in 24 in the last game. Could he get 24 minutes again and produce that against Indiana? Yeah, it's possible. I'm not super confident with using him. But if we hear that Luol Deng's going to come off the bench again, then maybe Green gets 25, 26 minutes again and becomes a guy that at 37 can beat his value, you know, rather comfortably. Interesting. 5,600 for Monte Ellis hasn't been good lately, averaging over 12 points, only 12 points in his last three games. You obviously need him to be a lot better than that, but is it possible? Can he get you 33? I don't think I'd want to put money on that. And not much else really gets me too excited here. 10,400 for Paul George is pretty good, actually. I'll take that back. He had 56 in the last game. I reckon 10,400 for Paul George is a really, really nice price point here. The Heat do slow things down in general, but I don't think that it's going to limit Paul George massively. Chris Bosh would also get a bit of a boost if he has to play some center with Hassan Whiteside out, so that's something to pay attention to. Yeah, Goran Dragic, maybe we have a look at. He was playing a little bit better. He's priced at 5,600, but I don't think he's 30-point player in this matchup. And a punt option you can look at is Tyler Johnson. He's put up over 21 in his last three. He put up 26 in the last game. It's probably hard to expect him to get 29 minutes. But in a tournament, if you think, well, not if you think, because there is a chance that he can get 29 in a tournament sort of setting, maybe you put him out there and get 30 points off him. There's a little bit to be said for considering him anyway. Detroit and Philadelphia is the next game. The Pistons are favored by 8. The total is 192.5. Mentioned that Tony Roden is out of this game, but Kendall Marshall is back. What does that do? It means that I don't know what to do with TJ McConnell and Isaiah Cannon. I won't be using those guys in daily fantasy. Ersan Ilyasova played 34 minutes in the last game. He's priced at 4,500. He's going up against the Philadelphia 76ers. That means that I can look at him in a tournament because they allow so many points to opposition power forwards that he could be in for a pretty big night. Stanley Johnson could also see extra run given it's the Sixers. He's at 3,500. He's been struggling of late, but we know that he can fill the box score in certain situations, so I wouldn't mind getting him into a tournament lineup. And Andre Drummond at 9,300. I reckon he's one of the better center plays on the board. Yes, he's against Philadelphia, but I don't imagine he needs to play 38 minutes to put up huge numbers. He could do it in a much limited role, as could Reggie Jackson at 7,300. He could put up 35 in 28 minutes. So he is definitely worth considering as well at that 7,300 mark. Jahlil Okafor at 6,100. He was really good in today's game. The Pistons aren't the most stout defensively. You can look at him at 6,100. I don't think it's a horrible play. 5,900 for Nerlens Noel doesn't seem like an ideal spot for me, though. Not much else really appeals. Bob Cove has dropped off. 6,700 is his price. He's averaging less than 24 across his last three. I don't think I'd be running him out there, nor TJ McConnell, nor Isaiah Cannon. The next game is the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Orlando Magic, and some pretty big news today from the Cleveland Cavaliers. Iman Shumpert and Kyrie Irving, they're considered doubtful for this game. But what David Blatt said is that maybe we'll see them play over this two-game road trip, which is Friday and I think Sunday is the second game. And it's the first time that he said, yeah, maybe they'll play. We know that they're inching closer to returns. They've both been practicing. So they could play in Friday's game, and they could play in the next game. But they're back. They're back very soon, both of them. It means we're going to see, well, Mo Williams is probably already droppable anyway from standard league point of view. Matthew Dellavedova, if you picked him up, his value is going to drop pretty quickly. J.R. Smith's minutes are probably going to drop as well, and we're going to see no Jared Cunningham and no James Jones also. It'd be shocked if Irving is not on a minutes limit for at least a week or so coming back, so we don't want to look at him for DFS purposes. But I think that it's obviously big news. J.R. Smith is questionable with an illness, so we have to check to see his status before the game starts, and I don't think we'll see C.J. Watson out there for the Magic. We have barely seen him at all this year. The Cavs are favored by 3.5. The total is 197 in this game. Lord Alfred Payton at 6,900 has been putting up over 37 a game in the last three. Looked really consistently as well. 6,900 is not a big price tag. This could all go south really quickly, but Skiles has been very, very consistent the last, say, five or six games. So I like Lord Alfred here. And LeBron, speaking of consistent, LeBron James is basically 50 points every night. 10,400 for him. He is against a pretty piss weak Magic team defensively in terms of what they do fantasy-wise defensively. LeBron has got a pretty good history against the Magic. I think that he is one of the better plays of the night at small forward. In fact, you could probably structure a lineup with Paul George and LeBron James as your two small forwards and be really happy with the return that they give you. I think Matthew Dellavedova at 4,400 is someone that is worth looking at unless Kyrie makes a return in this game, which feels unlikely, but Dally is someone to look at. And Kevin Love at 7,700, I'm not a massive fan of him at that price. He's been a little bit up and down. Look, he put up 36 in the last game, so that's all right, but the overall run of form of him lately hasn't been ideal. Not many other guys that I'm massively in love with here. I don't mind Nick Vucevic at 7,500. He's putting up 35 across his last three. I think that he can put up some decent numbers here. Now, the Cavs do have an ability to shut down opposition centers, despite Timofey Mozgov's pretty poor play of late, but Vucevic has been rock solid, and he's someone that is worth investing in. Victor Oladipo, I can't trust his bench minutes, despite how well he's actually played and how well the team's played. At 7,400, it doesn't make sense to look at him. And Toby Harris at 6,600, for as well as he's been playing, he's just not doing it on a daily fantasy point of view. He's averaging just 27 points in his last five, and he needs to do more than that at 6,600. Not many other guys that I think are worth paying massive amounts of attention to in this game. The Toronto Raptors face off against the Milwaukee Bucks. The Raptors are favored by 7.5. The total is 194 in this game. Injury-wise, Bebe Nguera for the Raptors, he's missed the last couple with an ankle sprain. If he returns, then Bismack Biyombo's value drops significantly. And we have to look at the point guard situation in Milwaukee. Jared Bayless almost definitely won't play. Grievous Vasquez has been doing a little bit of practice, but I would be shocked if he plays. So that means we're going to see more Michael Carter-Williams and more OJ Mayo. Mayo is priced at 4,800. He put up almost 30 points a game in his last three. He's one of the better plays of the day. Michael Carter-Williams at 5,700. He put up 38 in the last game, almost averaging 30 the last few. He's priced almost $1,000 more than Mayo, so that makes it a little bit harder to use him. So I'd probably be avoiding him in most spots. Jabari Parker has been pretty good also recently. Less than 5,000, you can consider him because his minutes have been over 30 in the last three games. Who else have we got to look at in this game? For the Raptors side of things, Terrence Ross is a tournament play. One good game, one bad game, but he is priced at 3,700, so it's not a lot of cash to splash. 4,300 for Corey Joseph, who's on a pretty consistent 30-minute-a-night roll. He hasn't really been that productive recently, but he did have a 26-point game in his last five. He has had a 30-point game this season in only 27 minutes. So in tournaments, and even his relatively solid cash gameplay, but in tournaments, he could even go at and give you 7-8 times value. Patrick Patterson's been trending up, averaging 32 minutes in his last three games, only giving you 17 points, but he's 3,600. So that doesn't make him a guy that to completely avoid, and the Bucks are really good for opposition power forward. So he's someone you can look at. If Nguera doesn't play, 4,000 for Bismack Biyombo becomes appealing to me. DeMar DeRozan is one of the better high-priced shooting guards on the board. The Bucks, again, are really lackluster against wing players. He put up almost 40 in the Raptors' last game. He could easily go for another 37, 38 here. That's sort of where he can go. He's had a really good season. This is an easier matchup for him. Greg Monroe at 7,700. Not sure I really love that one. And Kyle Lowry at 9,200. He was a little bit quiet in the last game. The Bucks do generally reduce opposition point guards' output, so I don't think I'm really on Kyle Lowry in this one. And Giannis Antetokounmpo's minutes have been reduced recently, only getting 31 across the last three. He's averaging 31 points in that time frame, but at 6,800, I'd want him to do a little bit more than that for me to become super invested in, although it's not too bad. The 31 points is not terrible, but again, I'd still want him I'd want him to produce a little bit more. The next game is the Golden State Warriors and the Boston Celtics. There is no spread for this one because obviously Klay Thompson is considered questionable with an ankle sprain. Now, Klay was asked what his ankle was like, and he said it's about 70%. Now, that doesn't inspire me with much confidence. If I had to put money on it now, I would say that Klay Thompson doesn't play, and we could be seeing an Ian Clark start. Now, Clark's had some odd sort of little hot streaks so far this season. He's minimum salary, so he'd be worth looking at a tournament. But Boston does destroy opposition shooting guards. They shut them down. So Hank Clark's not a good player. At minimum salary, there's going to be a little bit to look there. But it could be him. It could be Barbosa that gets the big minutes. It could be Brandon Rush, who's already starting in place of Harrison Barnes. It could be Sean Livingston seeing more minutes, playing next to Steph Curry. There's a number of different ways that the Warriors could go. So it means that you'd only want to use these guys in tournaments. That's about it. Jay Crowder at 5,200 has been pretty consistent, averaging 23 over his last three games. This is an okay matchup for him, you know, likely squaring off against Brandon Rush. Kelly Olynyk has been great, 4,200, averaging 24 points lately. If he gives you 24 points, you've smashed value easily. Now, what kind of sign of minutes is he going to get? If he gets 22, we know he can produce. I'd be okay putting Kelly Olynyk into a tournament lineup. Isaiah Thomas at 7,900 has been pretty good. That price is getting up there, so it's making it a little bit hard to use him. But the Warriors don't make it that hard for opposition point guards to score fantasy points anyway. Jared Sullinger's also been pretty good lately, almost 38 in his last game, 6,200 price tag, okay using him. Andrew Bogut's averaging 21.8 across the last three at 4,600. That makes him intriguing, but I don't really think that I want to put him out there in a cash game format. Draymond Green at 8,100. We know how good Draymond is, but it's not necessarily translating to daily fantasy numbers. He's not producing that 5x value that you need from him. And Klay Thompson would be awesome at 6,600, but I just don't think he's going to play. Andre Iguodala at 4,900. I don't hate that at 4,900. He's been almost returning value in that 29-minute bench role lately anyway, so it's not a horrible matchup for him. And Steph Curry is at 11,000. Now, Boston has shut down every other point guard, basically, in the NBA. Is Steph Curry different? Yes, but I still don't know if I want to spend 11,000 on him. If to get five times value at 11,000, he needs a lot of points. He needs 55 points. And while, you know, he almost had 55 in the last game, can you reasonably expect him to put 55 against Boston? I suppose it's Steph Curry, so nothing is reasonable with this guy. But I don't reckon it's... I would rather spend 10,000 on LeBron and Paul George than 11,000 on Steph Curry. I'll put it that way. As I said, with Brandon Rush, Ian Clark, all these min salary guys who could fill in for Clay and Harrison Barnes, they're only tournament options because we just don't know what Luke Walton's going to do with that rotation. The next game is the Charlotte Hornets and the Memphis Grizzlies. The Grizzlies are favored by 3.5. We have a typical Memphis total of 193.5 points. Injury-wise, there's not really much to talk about. We know that Al Jefferson is out, so Cody Zeller should see more run. He's been really good lately. 4,000 makes him a very intriguing guy to look at. Courtney Lee's a player who's definitely not intriguing, but at 3,700, that's very low salary. He's averaging over 20 points in his last three. He's averaging almost 18.5 in his last five. And if he gives you 18.5, that's bang, right on. Five times value for 3,700. So he's been pretty consistent lately. That could change very quickly, but he's worth looking at. Zach Randolph at 6,500 had been really bad until the last game, and then he exploded. Do you trust him? I don't, so I don't think I'll be playing him. And Matt Barnes at 4,000 has been putting up some pretty decent numbers, including if you're counting ridiculous half-court shots when you've got a timeout left with 3 seconds left on the clock to win a game. He's the league leader in that category. Jeff Green, no thank you. Jeremy Lin, Jeremy Lamb, they just don't get enough minutes for me, even though their salaries are less than 5,000. They just don't do enough. And Marcus Sol is at 7,900 here. You want him to get to 40 points. I don't think that he's going to get to 40 points in this matchup. It's not an easy matchup fantasy-wise, so that's not for me. 7,800 for Kemba Walker is probably bordering on a little bit high. I don't completely hate it, though. We've seen point guards recently put up good numbers against Memphis. They're not a team that shuts down opposition point guards, so Kemba Walker could be in a decent spot. He scored 40 in the last game. He was relatively efficient. He's someone to pay attention to. Mike Conley's been terrible. If you want to go contrarian, 6,300, no one's going to be on Mike Conley, so I reckon you can maybe sneak some value in a tournament that way. And Nick Batum at 7,600, he's averaging over 40 in the... he's averaging just under 40 in the last three games. He's been really consistent. This is a sort of a neutral matchup. I do like Nick Batum, despite the marginal increase in his salary. Couple of games left. The next one is the Washington Wizards and the New Orleans Pelicans. The Pelicans are favored by 3 points. The total is a big one, 216. Chris Humphries is questionable with an ankle issue. It's a back-to-back, first game of a back-to-back for the Pelicans. So Drew Holiday, we have to obviously monitor his status. And the big news, Kendrick Perkins is probable to come back from his pectoral strain. Yeah. Marcin Gortat, I reckon, is great value. He's played basically 32 to 33 minutes in all those games where he wasn't in Poland over the last couple of weeks. 6,300 for him, averaging 35 across his last three. This is a really tasty matchup for him. I'd be getting all over him. And John Wall at 9,500. That's expensive, but he's averaging over 50 points. That's a better return than what Steph Curry's doing over the last three games. A super easy matchup against the Pelicans as well. I would be looking to get him involved. Eric Gordon at 5,000. He'll probably start. He'll probably play close to 30 minutes, but he's been brutal since Tyreek Evans has came back. And a guy that we can look at in a tournament, 3,900 for Gary Neal. The minutes have been right up there for him, even with players back on the wing. It's not a hard matchup against the Pelicans on the wings. You can do worse than putting Gary Neal in to allow you to get other guys in like Paul George, like LeBron James, like Steph Curry, like John Wall. Get these other high-priced guys in. Maybe slot Gary Neal into your shooting guard spot. Bradley Beal at 7,200. The intrigue is there, definitely. And I don't think he's a horrible play, but there's probably a couple other ones better on the board. 7,000 for Tyreek. Look, just really stunk in the last game. 3.9 points only. That game should be wiped from the memories of all Pelicans players and all fans of the Pelicans and all DFS players who used any of those guys. He's already had a 40-point game this season. He's at 7,000. You'd have to think that he's in a decent spot here against the Wizards. And Anthony Davis at 11,000 as well, averaging 47. He even put up 33 in that debacle against Boston. So yeah, his average would be well over 50 without that sort of crap game in there. So I think that he is in line for a pretty decent return. Jarrett Dudley is still only 3,600. He did get benched in the fourth quarter of the last game, but yeah, Nene's not playing. Drew Gooden's not going to be there. We might not have Chris Humphries again. I think that Dudley at 3,600 is definitely someone that is worth looking at in a tournament. Not much else to really focus on here. I don't think Otto Porter at 5,600 is really that worthwhile. He saw a bit of a dip with Marcin Gortat coming back. He was averaging 31.8, or he is averaging 31.8 over the last three, which is appealing, but the trend with Gortat back is for him to have lower numbers. So I'm not sure that's an ideal matchup for him. And Ryan Anderson is priced at 6,500. I would love him at 6,000. I don't love him at 6,500. Oklahoma City at Utah is the next game. The Thunder are favored by 2.5. The total is 204 in this game. What do we do fantasy-wise in this game? Rodney Hood at 4,500. It's not an expensive price. Probably only a tournament play, but he's worth a look. Derek Favors at 8,200 I like a lot, and I like Gordon Hayward, even though he is up to 7,000. Hayward is averaging 37 over his last three. Alec Burks at 5,300 has been struggling a little bit lately, that's fair to say. He did have a 35-point game in the last five, but I don't think I'd want to be too reliant upon him. Russell Westbrook at 10,800 Yeah, I'm not worried about the Utah defense without Gobert, so can he give you 50 points? Yes. Kevin Durant at 10,300 I'm also pretty happy with using him in this game. Can he give you 50? He gave his 50 today, so he's a 45 to 50 point guy. So I'm pretty confident with getting those guys into lineups if possible. Not much else to really talk about unless we want to look at Serge Ibaka, who's priced at 6,100. He had a big game today, a 39-point outing, but I'm not really that confident in him replicating that in this one. The next one is Minnesota and Denver. The Timberwolves are favored by 1. The total is 202 in this game. We will hopefully see the return from Denver of Gary Harris, who's missed the last couple of weeks with a concussion. We have a couple of other injuries to look at. Darrell Arthur is questionable with a knee problem. Danilo Gallinari is probable with a knee bruise. Jameer Nelson is probable with a finger issue. And Kenneth Reed is probable with an ankle. So all of those guys should be in the lineup. What do we do? Jameer Nelson at 3,800. He's been playing. He played more minutes than Emmanuel Mudiay in the last game. Put up 22 fantasy points. You could do worse than having him in a tournament. Same with Emmanuel Mudiay. You hope that he can turn it around. He's been really bad. The price is 5,300. It looks appealing, but is it really? You can't rely upon him in cash games. Gorgui Dieng at 4,500. Don't mind this matchup, but I don't love it. There is always risk associated with Sam Mitchell and Gorgui Dieng. So it is tournament upside, but that's probably about it. Karl-Anthony Towns is averaging over 40 in the last games, in the last three. At 7,200, he is a pretty good play to me. I think that he's one of the better centers on the board. And Will Barton at 5,900 is averaging 33 points, 29 across his last five as well. He's worth looking at definitely at that sort of salary, as is Ricky Rubio at 71, who's had some pretty decent games recently without even scoring too much. And this is a great matchup against Denver's backcourt, who are just terrible at allowing points to opposition point guards. Andrew Wiggins is really struggling. 21 points in his last three, less than 25 in his last five. Priced at under 7,000, but it's still too expensive for me to really get too excited about him. Nemanja Bjelica and Shabazz Muhammad are both tournament options only. Shabazz has been putting up some okay numbers, so you can look at him because he could get hot and put up a 25 spot, and you'd be relatively happy with that at that price. Even if Gary Harris starts, I don't really want much to do with him. If you think Kevin Martin can drop another 37 like he did in the last game at 4,200, by all means, but please. And Kenneth Faried at 6,300. I don't want me some Kenneth Faried, nor do I want Joffrey Lavernier, Nikola Jokic, JJ Hixon, or Darrell Arthur. It is just too crowded in that front court to make much sense of it. On the surface, the Lakers versus the Spurs would be awesome for Spurs players. The Spurs are favored by 14.5. The total is 194, but they could win by 50 in this game. So I don't want to put Kawhi Leonard in. I wouldn't have wanted to put LaMarcus Aldridge in anyway. I don't want Tony Parker, Patty Mills, any of these guys, because the minutes could just be really, really knocked down, and it's not going to be ideal. Danny Green is the only one I look at in a tournament. Maybe he gets it going and they leave him out there to get his confidence going. He's 3,600. It's almost minimum, but even then, I can't trust him in a cash game. And Manu Ginobili at 4,800. The other thing is, this is the first game of a back-to-back for the Spurs. It's against the Lakers. Do they sit, guys? Does Ginobili not play? Does Duncan not play? And if that happens, that opens up a whole range of possibilities. And Boban Marjanovic becomes someone to look at, who put up 26 in his last game. Kyle Anderson becomes someone to take a look at. Jonathan Simmons is getting 16 minutes a game across the last three. It all depends on what happens. Don't be surprised if some of these guys either sit or have their minutes limited. And if you want to make some odd tournament lineups, throw one in there with Anderson, with Simmons, with Marjanovic, because it might be that Duncan plays and Aldridge plays and Leonard plays and Parker plays, but they might play 17 minutes and these other guys might play 30 minutes. This is one of those situations where that could happen, and you know, thinking a little bit smartly with it, you might be able to construct a good GPP. It's going to be pretty tough to do in a cash game. I would not advise doing it in a cash game if we don't know that's going to happen. But if you want to make a contrarian lineup, that might be a way to go and then get a lot of studs in there as well. The last game of the night is the Portland Trailblazers and the Phoenix Suns. The Suns are favored by 4. The total is 209 in this one. John Lua looks like he'll start. He'll play 30 minutes, and he's good for 27 or 28 fantasy points. At 4,500, it is almost impossible not to play him. We don't know if Tyson Chandler's going to be back, but Alex Len has been killing it lately. 31.8 in his last three. At 4,700, it screams brilliant. But if Chandler's back, I'm not sure that I would risk it. Now, Chandler could be back and play 10 minutes. You want to sort of see the words that come out from coaches and beat reporters to see exactly what the Suns are thinking of doing, but bear in mind that Alex Len has been absolutely on fire. The projections look really good for Alfa Rukamini at the moment against the Suns, but his production has been terrible. That means I only want to look at him in a tournament. I like CJ McCollum a lot at 7,200, averaging over 35. Brandon Knight's at 7,900. He needs to do more than average 32. He needs to be averaging 36, 38, around what Eric Bledsoe is doing. But then Bledsoe is $700 more expensive at 8,600. So both of those guys, it does make them hard to use. They're very consistent with what they do, but they're not consistently high enough to make up for that salary. Same as Dame Lillard, who's at 9,300. Now, this is a favorable matchup for Lillard, so maybe you can splurge on him, and hopefully he gets you a 45 or 46. But I'm not massively confident. Not much else really stands out to me here. You can look at Ed Davis in a GPP at 4,900, averaging almost 25 across the last three. He definitely has value here. And the other guy that you throw into a tournament is Mirza Teletovic, who's averaging 25.8 across his last three. Who knows if we're going to see Markieff Morris? He's ill. He hasn't been playing. We don't know what we're going to see from him. And Mason Plumlee's really struggling with foul trouble at the moment. So even though he's 5,500, I don't think that he is a really superb matchup. All right, that is all the games done. Let's bring up the daily fantasy plays of the day. There we go. Point guard, Corey Joseph, 4,300. Lord Alfred Payton, 6,900. John Wall, 9,500. At shooting guard, we go with OJ Mayo at 4,800. CJ McCollum at 7,200 and DeMar DeRozan at 75. Small forwards Matt Barnes, 4,000. Jay Crowder, 5,200 and LeBron James, 10,400. John Lua at 45 as a power forward. Jared Sullinger, 62 and Derek Favors at 8,200. While the centers we go with Bismack Biyombo, 4,000. Marcin Gortat at 6,300 and Andre Drummond at 9,300 to round out the show. I feel like there was a bit of a long show today. Not too bad, just over an hour. Hope you guys did enjoy it. If you do enjoy it, subscribe on iTunes, subscribe on YouTube, and leave that review. Those reviews are as good as gold to a podcast, and I do really appreciate that in bringing on some new sponsors, which hopefully I'm going to be able to get some new announcements in the next few weeks. Got some exciting developments happening behind the scenes here with the show. Follow me on Twitter at @redrock_bball. Make sure you are checking out the Basketball Monster Twitter account, which is Bask Monster. Check out basketballmonster.com, hardwoodparoxysm.com as well. That's it, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.